When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
My name is Anna Silk. For 6 seasons, I played Beau on the hit TV series Lost Girl.
And my name is Rachel Skarsten, and for 3 seasons, I played Tamsin.
Welcome to the Lost Girl Rewatch Podcast,
a show where we will look at all the episodes, share some behind-the-scenes stories,
and chat with some very special guests.
Now, on the show, our relationship was sometimes rocky,
but in life, our friendship is rock solid.
We are so glad that you are here to join us for this trip down memory lane.
We love that the family is back together again.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to season 2 of the Lost Girl Rewatch Podcast.
We're back.
We were gone for a little while, we know, but we are back. And as you can see, we are so fortunate to be back with the ever charming, oh, so handsome, so delightful,
so
and delicious,
episode.
And hot in this episode. Holy cow. Like, I actually think I'm sweating.
Oh, my gosh. Come on. Chris, the red dress takes the cake for a lot.
Chris Holden Reed is back with us. Yay.
Yes.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here and see your beautiful faces. I miss you guys.
We miss you. So we are going to talk about episode 1 and 2. Of season 2. We did 22 episodes. So this season on the podcast, we're coupling them up to talk about them. So we're going to talk about episodes 1 and 2. Episode 1 and episode 2 were both written by the incredible Michelle Lavretta. Episode 1 was directed by Rob Lieberman, and episode 2 was directed by Steve DeMarco. And you know what I remembered watching these? When we went back, remember how season 1 we shot out of order?
Yes.
Season 2, when we came back, we were told we're going to shoot in order, which was a gift, except episode 1 and 2. We started with episode 2. It was our first one back.
What series even does that? I've never heard of that. They come to you and say, oh, we're going to shoot them in order. You're welcome.
Yeah. I know. Like,
every series I've done shoots in order.
That was
like not the scenes of the episode, but the episodes, basically. Yeah. Or you do in blocks.
In blocks, right. But when we came back, we started with episode 2, and then we went to episode 1, and then we went 3, 4, 5, 6, and et cetera.
What a relief.
The problem with season 1 was our pilot episodes that John Fawcett shot a year before we shot season 1 was amazing, but it was a mid-storyline pilot. So it was episode 8. So they were trying to backfill, and they hadn't written the rest. So they were just filling things up.
But,
so we would shoot as they had
it
ready.
But then wouldn't you go 8, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? 9?
They just did whatever was ready. Because they were problem solving on the fly. Yeah. They were like, you know, how do we get them to this point?
Yep.
You know, and we did so much ambiguous acting. And I remember we would just be like,
like,
so
each other?
Which way should we go? And they're just like, just kind of keep it in the ambiguous zone.
Sit on the fence. Oh, that's a good, strong acting choice.
Yeah. That's a good direct. Yeah, exactly. It's always a strong choice to be ambiguous. But hey, people like season one.
But I want to say, so these episodes for you, Mr. Holden Reed, were pretty freaking powerful. Brought so much gravitas to the screen. And if everyone remembers the end of season one, we left off with, you know, this big battle between Bo and her mom. She's been looking for her mom. Now she's in this big battle. And Dyson goes to the Norn, who was incredible. And to, you know, to give his wolf. And instead what she takes, I can't even say it. It breaks my heart.
His love for Bo.
And so this, we start with one of those things on shows, which I love, when one main character and the audience knows something that another main character doesn't know. So Bo doesn't know this yet. And actually no one really does except for Dyson and the entire fan base and the audience. So we ended on really high stakes and we come back and Dyson's nowhere to be found. Which I love that. I love that. And I love, love your entrance. Anyway, talk about it.
Yeah. At the end of season one, I remember I was sitting in, Michelle didn't know how to hook Dyson's storyline. She was sort of brainstorming. And I actually just pitched her on it. I was like, why don't we have him run off into the woods like a wounded animal? And you don't know if he's going to come back or not. And at that point, I wasn't sure if they wanted me for season two. So I was like, it gives you a great out. Write me out of the story.
Just keep running. Or I can come back.
I'll just keep running.
Just keep running.
I just become Littlest Hobo.
Move on to the next town.
Move on to the next show. That's right. And she was like, that's great. So we kind of worked on that together. And then it was such a simple shoot, right? It was just like me in the woods and I run off. And so it like saved them a lot of problems. And Jay was like, I want you to come back. And like their music and the feet walking in. And like, you want to do this build. And of course we didn't run. We ran out of time to do that. So it's just like, Casey, pan up. Dysons and cups.
Yeah.
You know, it still worked, but like,
it was cool.
I remember.
And they gave you that real alpha male comeback of like, he's been out at a bar.
Roadhouse.
It's better than a bar. Roadhouse, you know.
So a funny little aside, I just came from ADR, like I told you. And the scene that I was looping was me coming out of a pond naked. walking up to a girl. And I just watched episode one where I take my shirt off in front of Hale. And it was a bit of a wake-up call to see the 15 years before Chris Holden Reed and then the 50-year-old half-naked Chris Holden Reed. I was like, oh, so sad.
Listen,
I was pretty shredded.
You were pretty shredded, my friend. And I'm sure you were shredded. Yes. And I know it's weird to look back and like, I look at my cheeks in some of them. I'm like, look at my little cheeks. I look so young, so dewy.
I know.
It's so funny. Like I look back at that guy and it's like, my face is like changed too. And it's like, he just looks like such a little kid to me now. I'm like, oh,
you guys do. You look so young.
But
you know, the crazy thing about it is that when I joined, well, and I actually thought that we were the same age for quite a while, but just the number, your age, when you told me, and of course I was 20 to a decade younger. And I remember thinking, wow, like, they're so grown up, you know, and they have families and stuff and they're married. Like, that's so crazy. And then I look at you now and I'm like, what was I thinking? They were zygotes. Like, they're tiny.
I know.
Time humbles us all.
Like probably partway through Lost Girl, I was your age now. The age you are now-ish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
So, one thing we should obviously state, audience, is... Rachel was not in season two.
No,
obviously everyone knows this, but she is co-hosting this season because we love her and we want to see more of her. And you have some fun questions and,
So, okay. I actually had a question for you guys because you do this season one and then you're picked up for season two. How did you both feel about that? coming back? You know, were you excited? What was your memory of that experience coming back into the show after finishing one season?
Well, I think we spent the whole break in a roadhouse somewhere drinking, bar fighting.
That's right.
No, I can't remember if we found out before the season ended or if we ended and then found out. I just don't remember.
It was pretty quick, if I recall, because like we waited. Oh, what? So we waited a year in between the pilot and season one. Was it another year in between season one and two, or was it quick?
I mean, I think it was quicker.
I know I would have. Was it? Okay, I can't remember how the timeline. No, it was actually pretty long because I went out and shot Underworld out in Vancouver. That was like four or 5 months. I shot something else in Morocco.
What was I doing?
It was long.
What the heck was I doing?
You were rolling around in your money.
That's right. I had piled it on my bed and I was writhing around until the phone rang. Hello. Oh, season two.
it was another
year. That's completely not true, by the way, everybody. But yeah, it was a chunk of time. But I do remember, this is what I remember.
How was it a year? Normally you don't have... Like, how did they hold you for a year? I don't understand.
They just did.
They held us gently. Yeah, there was. I remember there was a renegotiation of the time because they had like 6 months and then they actually renegotiated.
Yeah, they did to hold you
which
longer.
Which is why I was able to renegotiate a second season because I did season one like for peanuts. Mm-hmm. And so.
Like literally, we would feed Chris peanuts. Yeah. We'd say, good job.
That's why I got so ripped. Yeah. I was just eating
pure
peanuts.
Protein.
And an amazing keto diet.
And because you were part wolf, like you were very obedient.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Peanuts just follows Chris around. I don't know, because you know how it cons. Chris, you and I will talk about how when we would have kissing scenes, you'd be eating peanuts. Yeah. Like, I don't know what it is about peanuts, but it just keeps coming up.
I have kissed Chris when he has been eating peanuts too.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
I have.
It's all he was getting. We can't, you know what? In retrospect, I feel badly. Chris was only getting peanuts.
Yeah, now we know why. That was everything.
Right? That's right.
That was it. That was your meals and your pay. But I do remember when we came back to film. We filmed episode 2, then episode 1, which I've already discussed. But I do remember us all coming back and we kind of just like locked in and like hit the ground running. Mm. It didn't feel as like, who are we? What's happening? We already had done that in season 1. So I just remember coming back and being like, we're on, you know, and everyone was excited and everyone kind of had dug deeper into their own characters. And
you didn't know you were doing 22 episodes at the beginning, right?
No,
but we found out early, like around episode 7-ish, I'm going to say.
Yeah, 7 or 8, somewhere mid-season.
And were you excited about that? Did you want to do 22 episodes?
Well,
yeah, because we didn't know what it meant.
We're Canadians.
We're like, yeah, let's keep going.
We're Canadians.
And then come to episode 20, we were just like, when will this end?
I'm in coma.
If I have to say the Gerudo more time, I'm going to punch a writer in the face.
What they had to do was say Gerudo a million times. And I remember at one point coming out of like filming at the end and I was like, is it day or night? Night or day? Like I didn't know what was up and down. You know,
so many Fratterdays.
He's just eating peanuts. We're like, Gerudo.
Yeah. I'm eating the peanuts from him. Like, we're just like,
just pulling them out of my beard. We don't know who we are.
It was exciting because, like, it was a back nine. They call it getting the back nine, right?
Yeah.
And that's just not something we heard about in Canada. We're like, you know, we didn't know of that. Yeah. We knew nothing. So it was very, very exciting. But it was like 10 and a half months, I remember, of, you know, just her.
It was a grind.
Was that
a
month did you guys start filming? Was it the summer, like end of the summer?
Yeah, because we're outside.
Yeah, it's warm.
Yeah, 205, it was all summer. So we shot all the way through to spring. Yeah. We almost did like a summer to spring.
Yeah, it was all seasons.
Yeah, we were out in the winter. Well, yeah, you've done 22 episodes before,
that takes
Rich.
10 months.
Yeah, exactly. So you get all the and
you did that on Rain, right?
No, Rain we didn't do 22. I think we did like 16. They did 22 the first two seasons. And then on Batwoman, I did 20 and we were shut down by the pandemic. And I was like, that's cool. Don't care. I was very happy to have it. It's a lot. Shooting 22 episodes it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Full on. Okay. So then you land back in season two, episode one.
Yeah.
What's your favorite memory if you do remember?
I know the opening in the tunnel with me and Casey and then Kenzie. Mm-hmm. What I remembered watching that was that tunnel, like it was like rocky. And so we had to like walk across rocks, hold the weapon that had a flashlight that we couldn't shine into the camera. And the tunnel was full of spiders. Like real spiders. So
that gun was like the biggest gun I've ever
they
seen.
They look great.
So I'm so scared of, well, who wants spiders landing on their head? Nobody. Even if you love spiders, that's not where you want them. So I remember.
Well, maybe if you love them.
If you love them. I had to pretend I love them. I had to disengage and just be like, I love spiders. If they land in my mouth, it's okay. Because I was so scared. And I just remember walking through that tunnel. That's what I remember. And Lisa, our lovely props lady, I remember her going through the tunnel for me to look for spiders and be like, there's no spiders. And I'm like, I know you're lying, but you're very sweet. That's my first memory.
Props look great. Yeah. Like Ian Brock and the production design. I like when Casey holds up like that flame Gatling gun. I was like, that's so cool.
I know.
I totally forgot that. Yeah.
And it was the first time we ever heard about Underfay, right? Because that was kind of interesting. Right. That's where we got into those like darker unearthing of things.
Yeah. One of the first things I remember about season two was we had a new showrunner, Grant Rosenberg. Yes. Rosenberg, who was coming in from other shows, new to our universe. But a real good pro, you know, LA pro showrunner. And it was an interesting learning curve working with him and seeing what his, you know, because we were also invested in season one. Michelle was invested. He was much more like, and I remember him sitting me down and he was just like, he interviewed all of us in the beginning. And he was like, and he asked me point blank, what do you think your job is on this show?
What? Isn't that a great question?
Yeah. It's a great question, as actor. Yeah. And I was like, I think I'm the grounding baseline, is what I said. I think that Dyson's job is to make the world real, that all the other things can get built on. Like him and Trick are the kind of baseline of the Fey reality. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I said that, he was like, you're absolutely right. And he was like, this guy gets what he's doing. And him and I became partners at that point. And we had a great relationship up to a point where then I, you know, there was some stuff that we disagreed on. And I remember we had a good disagreement, but then we fixed ourselves sort of mid season and we worked really well.
He was a good dude. He was a good dude. He brought a lot to our show.
Yeah. A real pro.
He's written two novels.
Really? Wow. I used to reach out to him every once in a while. I should again. So that was my first memory and of going, and he kind of gave me permission to be that grounded kind of performance that I like to do for Dyson, which sometimes, granted, I take it too far because, you know, we had Jay going, no, we want more funny.
I love that because I feel like by the time I joined the show, you were lighter in your portrayal of Dyson. Yeah. And it's really interesting for me to go back and watch your performance in the first two seasons because you're very like gritty and grounded and there's so many moments of silence that you have. And it's just
that's
such
the kind of acting that I came from. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks. That was the training that I had. And I love what I brought to it. And it was Law School was, and we've talked about the amount of craft we had to learn in Law School because that is a strength. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other crafting portions of doing character and show and different show style. And so Law School kind of took me as my personal performance from that sort of grounded gritty work, which I was comfortable doing and like forced me to learn to go that lighter and like to service the show in different ways. And like, honestly, it was a total benefit to my career learning all those things through Law School.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like we did everything. We did everything. Lost Girl. Wow. We went from super grounded to dancing with the dancing on the beds with you two with parasites in our ears. And remember when we were like Alice in Wonderland and I had the prosthetics and like you were
the Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz, sorry, not Alice in
Wonderland. But it developed like, organically, like it, you know, like it didn't feel like Dyson suddenly changed. It just felt like he was allowing himself, you know, because in this season, like Rachel just said too, like you were so, especially when you come back in this first episode and the second.
This is the beginning of Grumpy
Well,
Dyson.
It's that he, I remember you and I having a conversation about you talking, you were saying to me like the challenge of playing the absence of something. Right? Because your love was taken away. How do you play the taking away of something? Right? How do you, and so what worked so well, I thought, was the anguish in Dyson and this dilemma of telling Bo. And also, I mean, I love, love the kiss, which I'm jumping ahead a little bit.
Into two?
I think the kiss was in the end of the first one. Remember they set up the round track and there was all those people dancing and then you and I had to kiss. And what I love about it is Bo turns away so like full and Dyson's face is just, you see that it's absent for him. Like you wonder, but also you can see he's pained by the absence of love, which is so interesting. And how do you do that? But you did it. I mean, you did it.
But good. Because, it's a weird one, right? It's like, is it just total apathy? Or like, or is he aware of the loss of it? And he has to be aware of it. But what is the loss of a feeling that he can't feel? It's like blindness or deafness.
Yeah. Or, you haven't forgotten her. And you have the knowledge of the love.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just doesn't penetrate. It was really interesting. I remember we would talk about it while you were eating peanuts.
It was a challenge.
And then it'd be like, action. Oh, okay. Absence of love. But anyway, I had forgotten all about that until I watched these. And I was like, oh, yeah. And it was really cool to watch.
Well, when I just was watching 202 and at the end there where, you know, you've got the wine and we do then you kiss me again. I couldn't remember how it unfolded. And I thought that when you did the blue eyes on me, that you were going to feel like an absence, like a void, like almost a black hole. And I couldn't remember how it went. I thought you were going to be like, oh my God, that you would realize at that point that there's nothing there. But no, the writers were like, it's, you know, cause they have to like stretch out the anguish. Yeah. Right. So it couldn't be something as simple as that. So then Dyson had to be like, well, I'm done.
And Bo had to give her the classic psycho girlfriend. I can make you love me. which was kind of cool for Bo to be a bit of a psycho.
But that was a good scene too, that last scene in 202, because that really sort of broke us then on the different trajectories.
It's right? also very sweet. Like Bo at this point, when I look back, she's still so hopeful and there's an innocence in like she still does not understand the danger of the world she's in. You know, she just doesn't quite get it.
Skylar's just going back to school. I'm just saying bye.
Bye.
Came home for lunch.
Very nice. The other, what was I going to say about, I have here Chris hot. Yeah. Hot, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever.
Also the punch. The punch in the face.
Yes. I love that scene in episode 1. The punch scene. That's right. When I show up at your place, I mean, and I'm so happy to see you. And then I punch you across the face, which I love. I love that scene. It's so good. You're shirtless in my memory. I only just watched it, but I can't remember. To me, you're shirtless all the time.
Shirtless with a motorcycle.
I know. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
Like,
just all man stuff.
Strolled.
Yeah.
I just love that. I love that punch. That's such a classic Michelle move too, just to have that strength.
There was a lot of good moment. Like we started off with a bang in season 2. Yeah. It was great.
I also love the character who does all the sniffing. Like he's like, and he has a cold.
Yeah, I know, oh right? My God. And he's got the allergies.
That's where we were still like dealing with like Faye hiding in plain sight and him just saying like, oh, they're one of ours, like, or they're all of them or whatever. He was so great, that actor. Yeah. And I love totally that he has an allergy. And like, this is just so funny.
Yeah.
You know,
We've said this before, but all the guest stars on the show, even people who are only there for maybe two scenes were fantastic actors. Like the other guy, the one who's vomiting out skin.
Oh God, he was so creepy
and scary. Like just the first time you see him, and then he's like, I don't know if it was CGI and his like jaw goes down. I'm watching.
Rachel, you don't know if it was CGI?
Special skills.
His jaw can't do that.
I can open my mouth pretty wide.
See. Oh my God, you actually can.
I don't think I can. I used to be able to when I was werewolf.
Well, yeah, but
before my accident.
Jaw.
Post-job reconstruction. But also Paulo Nunes was terrific as the
circusy guy.
The circus headmaster, or whatever you call it.
I loved the episode. I did too.
I love you smelling the straw. Like you get down, you're like, you're always like sniffing the knife.
I'm always smelling stuff. Which, as you guys both know, is something
I do. That's what I was going to say. Rachel, like you must remember, like, food would come around and Chris would open it and smell it like this, like right away. Like, and that's what my husband does too. And I'm like, what if it's bad? You smell people.
It's men.
So when you meet, Chris Holden Reed at a sci-fi convention, just know he is sniffing you.
He's smelling you.
Yeah, I'm smelling you.
So make smell it count.
Good. Smell good, please. Do everybody a favor.
Or at least memorable. At least be memorable.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
All right, so let's go around to episode two. Yes. So you guys shot this first before episode one.
Yes, we did. And
do you remember what your first scene back was? Do either of you remember the first scene you shot in the episode?
I do.
Because that would have been the first in season two. Uh-huh.
And that's when I saw that scene, that's when I remembered that we shot season two or episode two first. Mm. Because it's the very last scene where we're outside and the stag, played by the beautiful Natalie Brown, mm-hmm. has been arrowed. Mm-hmm. And we were outside and I remember my eyes wouldn't stop watering. My hair was a fuzzball. I always remember by hair. And my eyes actually wouldn't stop tearing. And that was the first day of filming. And so if I watch it now, I can see how glassy-eyed I am. And I remember it being like the first day and I was like I was just a big mess. And so that's the weight I bear from that memory.
That's your memory.
That's my memory. That's how Chris, I know.
Yeah. I just eating peanuts. I don't remember. I mean, I remember of Natalie Brown is a personal friend of mine in Toronto. And what's funny is the stand-in Tommy was also in the back. And Tommy is a personal friend of mine over the years now. You're like, we went to surfing trip. We were in Costa Rica together with all of our families like last year. And so I totally forgot that he was in that. And I was like, oh my God. And so Matt and I, we hang out sometimes in Toronto. I was like, and Tommy, what the fuck? It was so funny to see us like 15 years ago.
Natalie has worked steadily for so many years. Oh, she's beautiful, obviously. She actually looks like a deer, you know, like her eyes, like, and she's such a lovely person. And so we were lucky to have her in that episode.
Yeah. And it also introduced Lachlan.
Yes. Yes.
Played by Vinnie Walsh. Yeah,
who was incredible. And I love that intro of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who may or may not be on the pod.
Stay tuned.
I hope he does. He's in Calgary right now shooting Billy the Kid.
Pretty awesome. So what? Episode two. What do we say about that? Yeah. I mean, There were so many great performances in episode two. There was something about it that didn't like flow as well to me. I don't know why. Maybe it's because it was the first one back. There was something that just didn't, it wasn't as seamless as the first one in my mind and in my memory.
Let's be honest here. You thought it was a bit of a snoozer.
I thought it was a bit of a clunker.
A clunker.
Like it.
There was a lot going on. But also, yeah. Remember, we were dealing with Steve DeMarco at the time, who was the hatchet man. He was called a hatchet man for a reason. He would not give us enough takes. He would cut into our stuff real tight and quick. He grew to love the show and respect it more and changed his directing dynamic down the seasonal roads. But in the beginning, I did not like Steve
DeMarco. It was very fast. It was fast and dirty. It was so quick.
It was too fast, too dirty. And I didn't find that he respected the show and the medium.
Do you think that change between season two and season three
definitely.
Okay, because I loved style. I loved how fast it was. I thought it was like, if you showed up and you knew your shit, then you were done by lunch because he knew what he wanted. You knew what you wanted. And it was like all systems go.
But in the beginning, he was arrogant, egomaniacal about it. And like, he was coming in as like the guy. He hadn't embraced the show as we all know, he kind of all of a sudden started championing the show and was like,
very much,
this is my show, which is also a bit of a problem. But
frankly, I think he was Faye. So
yeah, I mean, Steve DeMarco looked like Faye.
He did embrace the show and he kind of embraced all of us too. I think it was fast and dirty.
But it wasn't like that in the episode.
The hardest thing for me to watch in episode two, the hardest thing was me walking in that red dress and my voiceover. I remember on set, like being handed the script and being like, do the voiceover. And this is what it sounds like. This is what it sounds like. We'll walk into the building and we'll go in there and Hale, you'll go over here. And then Dyson, you'll go over there. Cut. Like, and that's what they used. I mean, like I never recorded it again. It sounds horrible.
Really?
Maybe no one's going to notice.
You did the recording on set. You didn't do it in ADR.
And I did it like...
And they just handed it to you for the first time.
And I thought it was like marking it or something. It's just, awful. Yeah, yeah. It's awful. Yeah.
I remember I got an argument about him and I was like, dude, you need to do another angle so you have something to cut away to, because this isn't flying right now. You didn't give us enough time to do a good performance and now you're doing it as a oneer. We need something to cut into. And he was like, I was like, just fucking shoot something. And like him and I got into it.
he kind of liked getting into it, I think. But
he did. He liked that.
I do feel like the episode suffered a little bit. It just felt like it just missed the mark. It was like within striking distance, it missed the mark.
And I remember that's why I was pissed at him on set, because I could feel in his pace that he was dropping balls, or like the balls weren't all on the table. I was like, but then it all changed around.
We like balls on tables.
Do you think it would have been different had it been directed by someone else? Because I find in shows, like, there are amazing episodes and things just click. And then some, like, not every episode can be amazing. Or would it have been?
It was probably also quite a long episode, which is probably maybe why they gave it to him.
Because
a lot is going on.
And we shot in Casa Loma, right? That location in Toronto. And it was beautiful. But there's just a lot of like time restraints when you're shooting in that kind of a location, right? Just a lot of crunch.
I mean, I think John Fawcett would have done an amazing job with it, but it probably would have run 55 minutes as opposed to 47.
But I don't know why.
That's what that happened.
You guys are watching on this, when you do the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see that, Chris? That you were getting like bubbles?
Up. Rachel, do it again. Yeah. I mean, for those of you watching the video, you'll see when Rachel does...
And then it's recognizing a thumbs up.
Yeah, but like now it's not working.
That's what iPhones are doing now. And like, I've seen people doing interviews where they're talking about something like harrowing and serious. And they'll be like, just tell me, and their hands will do this. And all these fireworks will go behind them. Like, tell me about your ordeal. You know, like, and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry about these fireworks. What is going on? We're just being taken over.
Can you turn it off?
Yeah.
Probably
you can. AI is going to ruin us. This actually, guys, this isn't even us. This is just our, I'm still sleeping and Chris is in the woods and Rachel, I don't know what you're
eating
doing.
She's peanuts, yeah.
But this is just AI, us.
Yeah, like weird. Anyway, most of you are just listening to us, so it doesn't, doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you think worked then the best in this episode and what really didn't work?
Well, the clunkiness just didn't work. Like it just didn't have the flow, but what worked? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot that worked.
Yeah. I mean, it got the job done in terms of introducing the characters that then we're going to live with for the next 20 episodes. Yeah.
But also your arc in episode one and two, Chris, was in particular was like, you know, you have to tell Bo at the end of the first episode, you have to tell her that the Norn, which I love that scene, by the way. And it's heartbreaking for both of them.
Yeah. We really had to set up because then, you know, it gets more engaged with Lauren. And then that's really where they brought in the start of the fracture, which into the love triangle, quadrilateral, pentagram, however many sides it ended up being.
Parallelogram.
Just and call then, it polygon. Yeah. Multi-sided love affairs. Definitely those were the ones that had to fracture the Dyson bow singularity, let's say. And then the one thing that I remember about the whole season, especially when we start stretching it out, and I talked to Grant, the writer, and it was like, how do we keep dragging this on and make it interesting? Like, where can Dyson move to from this? You know, and that's when they brought in Kiara, another, which I guess is like 207 or something like that. No, it was in 205. Mm-hmm. 205 is going to be the big Dyson backstory one where we did the Braveheart Dyson.
Yes.
I remember that episode so well because when I joined the show, I wanted to watch all the episodes. And I remember I was in my trailer watching it on a DVD on the TV. I don't know why that episode I remember, but I just remember being on a really long break watching that episode and just being like, wow, this show's so cool.
Chris can do a Scottish accent. That's so interesting.
It's got to be even more like hairy and surly.
Hairy. That's right. With hair extensions. And that's where they brought the Norn back. That was his first encounter with the Norn.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, we can get to that. Bring me back to that episode. I'll talk to you about that.
We'll bring you back to that.
They introduced Kiara.
But that's down the road. Talking about one and two was just really a nice.
I just loved the arc for Bo and Dyson. Like they had a whole story, a whole thing that happened in just those two episodes. You know, a beginning, middle, and end.
It was the
end.
Most emotional stuff going on for them. You know, it was high stakes.
And Bo's not just like jilted. She's like, you know, and that I love the last scene in episode two with Kenzie and Bo. It's one of the best friend scenes. They're eating ice cream. And I think it's in that scene, but maybe I'm wrong, maybe it was the beginning. I can't remember. But at one point she says to Kenzie, he gave up that for me, like to save me. That alone is love. Like that's the love, you know, that's also Bo's very naive place. But I just love that hopefulness in her still. And I love...
Absolutely. You played it so well. Like,
Well, thank you.
In episode one, too. Or at the very beginning scene of episode two when you're on the swing.
Now that's where Steve DeMarco being your director is amazing, right? When you're on this giant swing, which like, it's so funny. I'm sure that they probably just finished putting it in before I got in there. And they're like, it's fine. Yeah. Go ahead, safe. No, they always made sure I was safe. But
you did such a good job of like seeming a little crazy, like crazy enough that like Kenzie was like, hold on a second. What's going on here? But like being like, no, I'm just going to win him back. It's time. It's a
plan.
Restart.
It's a plan. Once you have a plan, you feel good. Yeah. No, I love that.
And you look fucking smoking hot in that red.
You know, 90. I still have that red 90.
Really?
You're welcome, wear it, Seth. but I still have that red nightie because once in a while I'll be digging and I'll be like, oh yeah, the red nightie. More and more stuff.
Wait, that wasn't your red nightie?
No, no, no. I just kept it.
You just kept it. Interesting. Where is it?
It's like over in my drawers. Over there.
Really?
Go get it.
Put it on.
Put it on. Take it off.
Come back. You'll both be eating peanuts. One other thing I loved in this sequence of episodes was the little girl, you know, the vision.
Yeah, I remember.
I can't remember if I told this story before, but like, I love seeing children work because she came to set so prepared. We go to the bar to block the scene and I have my sides and, you know, I'm like trying to figure it out and I'm like looking and I start reading and I look up and she's like right there. She's like, you know, there's a warning coming. And I was like, oh my God, you know all your lines. hang on, let me find it. You know, and I was so thrown by her, like, because she was just so good and so present and like didn't miss a beat in every rehearsal moment and everything. She just did it. And it was just so cool to work around someone so young.
Well, because children, some children do, but I think a lot of children, actor children who have gotten into that profession. I mean, think about it when you guys were young. I don't know. I got into it as a kid and it wasn't a job to me, or it wasn't like you played pretend all the time. Yeah. So it was kind of second nature. You weren't embarrassed by playing pretend. You weren't self-conscious. Mm-hmm. That's just what children do. I think it makes them very natural, brilliant actors when they have that it factor, you know?
If they can be kids to do that, though, like I've worked with a bunch of kids and there's a rare one that's like that, but I found most of them do it by rote. They learn, like, whether it's the mom that's like, okay, get the line, you know, they learn it totally perfect. And then they actually can't be very natural. Mm-hmm. They just say it.
And it's too bad because what that does to a young person is, first of all, if they ever want to continue to be an actor, you're teaching them what acting isn't, you know, and you're kind of making that in them at a young age. And then they kind of don't stand a chance. And it also doesn't feel as good to perform that way. You know, so I know I hate seeing that like super stagey, you know. Anyway, this is sad.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris, you're a child actor right now. How do you feel about it?
You're a child with a beard.
Perpetual child actor.
Lifelong child actor.
Brought my Dungeons and Dragons set to set. I'm just going to roll up some characters while I'm setting up the cameras, if that's okay.
The only acting I did as a child, because you guys were both actually child actors,
I started when I was 21.
I think I'm the only child.
Well, I did acting as a child, but I wouldn't call myself a child actor because I did a lot of local commercials in my hometown and then we got paid $5. Ooh. That's right. Five big ones, which was big.
Wow.
And then they paid you $5 to be in a commercial. Yeah.
And then we'd walk across the street to King's Place to go to Sigs and Things. That was the name of the little shop that had candy. And we'd buy candy.
But how did they even get away with paying you $5?
It was local commercials.
Non-union.
That was my experience. That's it.
Yep. Back where St. Brun's is where friends are just strangers you don't know yet.
That's right. And they rip you off if you're... Five big ones, which is probably more like 20 today.
Years later, you'd lay in a bed of money and it would be
That's
fine.
Right. Between seasons, I would lay...
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
In your red nightie.
In my red nightie. Oh my God. This is so perfect. This is an Instagram photo waiting to happen. Not...
you heard it here first on the Lost Girl Rewatch Podcast Instagram. Well, on that note, I think we've covered just about everything. Mm-hmm. There's anything else you guys want to add about that season two episodes?
Just that it's great to see it again.
I know.
You know, to see us all and doing our thing and
right now.
Yeah. And it's great to see you again, Mr. Holden Reed. And thank you for being here with us. And too. I know fans are going to love to hear from you as they always do. And it's just, you're always a breath of fresh air. So we really appreciate you.
Do you think we're going to look back on this episode in 15 years and be like, damn, Chris was hot?
The lesson is, no matter what, Chris is always hot.
I'll just have you know, I cut my own hair last night.
Okay, you did well. Right. And you know, you're wearing that nice fisherman sweater. Like, I'm into the fisherman look. In fact, what I've been saying down to here to people is like, I love that like Captain Highliner look. And then I realized no one knows who Captain Highliner is here.
What?
Like, yeah, but that's also because you grew up in New Brunswick. Of course, you're into like the fisherman look.
Yeah, I want people to smell kind of fishy.
I was frankly going for the Nordic ski guy look.
Right.
But
You're a Nordic ski on a fishing trip. There you go.
Fantastic.
Anyway, thank you, Ms. Scarston. Thank you, Mr. Holden Reed. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And
thank you all for coming.
We'll see you guys on the next one.
Bye. Yeah, I'll see you at 2:05. All right, bring you back for the Dyson backlash.
We will.
Backstory.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Okay, so it is that time where we answer voicemails from you guys. And we're so excited to do this. This is the first time we're hearing these voicemails. So Anna, do you want to kick it off?
Yes, I do. I'm very excited. Our first voicemail ever on the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast is from Amy. Let's listen.
Hello, ladies. Hey, Rachel and Anna. Anna, it's Amy. I know you're shocked to hear from me. Totally kidding. And I can't believe that we have to do this in one take. That is not fair. Anywho, are we only allowed to ask questions specific to season two? And then I just want to know which you guys preferred shooting, inside or outside, not including the days that it's cold, because I know that would suck. But which did you guys like to do? And then if it is specific to season two, just start with season one then, I guess, because that was shot outside. Okay. Thank you, ladies. Have a great weekend.
Okay. Thank you, Amy, for your question. And I'm very happy to hear from you. I don't know. I mean,
that one doesn't have to be specific to any season. I think it can be sort of general.
Yeah.
Do you like inside or outside?
Yeah. I mean, I like lots of mixing it up. I do like if we've been on location, which is like outside or away from the studio, I like coming back to the studio and having like a little bit of a hunker down week. That's kind of nice. I don't know. We're always too hot, too cold, too wet, too dry. There's something nice about the energy of outside, though.
Okay. For sure. If you're like, you know, downtown beside a coffee shop and it's like temperate summer, but when it's winter,
and someone brings you a coffee.
Rare. Yeah. Usually it's like you're shooting outside and it's 4 a.m. and you're freezing because it's winter, or you and I in Brazenwood where it was so hot. Like, I think I lost 20 pounds of water weight. All in my pants. Legit. But so I would have to say for sure, sometimes it's nice to shoot outside, but I'm like a studio girl all the way. I love shooting in the studio.
Yeah, I do too. I think if I have to choose, I like the security of the studio. It's a little bit more controlled. And questions, guys, could be about any season. It doesn't have to be specific to season two. FYI.
We'd love it to be specific to the episode. That's very fun, but it doesn't have to be.
It does not have to be. Let's do another one. This one is from Yolanda.
Okay, Yolanda.
Question for Anna. What's your favorite food?
Oh, God. What's my favorite food? I mean,
well, you don't like hot dogs. That's for sure.
I definitely, let's start with what I hate. Hot dogs, veggie dogs. Any type of tube of something. I don't like it.
Type of tubed food.
Yeah,
tube. You're not into.
I'm not into. But my favorite food, I mean, I love sushi. I feel like everyone says that. I love vegetables. Boring, but I do. I love them. I love roasting vegetables. I remember you used to get steamed veggies with like olive oil and hot sauce or something on it.
Oh yeah. Steamed veggies with sriracha. How did you remember that?
Because I remember everyone through food.
That's so funny. I know you do. You do actually remember everyone's food.
I do.
Yes. Steamed veggies with sriracha. I still get that on set. Mm-hmm. That's my go-to.
Nice.
But it was, they did probably the best on Lost Girl. Maybe tied with one other show for selection of veggies.
Mm. You know. Nice. Mm. Nice. Good. Well, great questions, guys. Thank you. Keep sending them in and we will keep answering them. See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast, which is produced by Anna Silk, Rachel Skarsten, and Seth Cooperman, with theme music by our very own Blood King, Rick Howland. Please rate, review, and share the Lost Girl Rewatch podcast. This enables us to grow and to continue bringing you exciting new content every week. If you don't already, follow us on Instagram and on our YouTube channel at Lost Girl Rewatch.
You can also subscribe to Patreon, where you will get exclusive video access to all of our episodes.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.